Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
Welcome along to another episode of The Kickoff. My name is Cathal Minogue, and once again, the man sitting in front of me, the man with all the knowledge, the one and only Colm Buick from Off The Ball. How are you, son?
CM, well, how are you? You're looking well in the blue. The blue of Kevin's.
Big weekend. Big weekend.
A saint, of course.
Yes, which is not the case. They're just Kevin's, but there's been a few issues recently with people calling us St. Kevin's. We're in the Leinster quarter final this coming weekend, whenever you're listening to this. It's on Saturday. And let's see what happens. So I said,
this is a shout out to all of you out there. The very best of luck to the Kevin's boys, my team on the football kickoff. Hopefully if they win a few more championships, they will eventually be Saints. Saints of the game.
Well, if we don't win after that. Come here. Speaking of fans, because hopefully a lot of fans now will go to the Kevin's match on Saturday. Mm. Interesting, the whole football fandom in general, right? I don't know how you feel about Trent being booed every single time he got the ball during the week when Real Madrid came to Anfield and lost. What do you think of that?
Strongly.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have strong feelings about it.
And you in agreement with the Liverpool fans?
Total disagreement. I think it's disgraceful that they're booing him. Unbelievably so. We had a debate about this and Off The Ball. You'd be surprised to hear. And it's torn the universe apart. Because if you talk to Liverpool fans, they're very vexed by the notion of Trent Alexander-Arnold these days, the majority of them. You talk to some of them and they kind of get his point of view. The way I see it is the guy helped them win the lot at Liverpool, right? Champions League, Premier League, clean sweep, and played a significant part, and they're missing him this season. They're slightly improved now, the last couple of games, Liverpool, but they're still missing Trent Alexander-Arnold because there's nobody like Trent. I know he's very flawed defensively and it'll cost you the odd game here and there with a goal, but what he creates is, you haven't seen a right foot like that since David Beckham, or Sir David Beckham as he'll be called now.
Yeah.
For Trent, he wanted to try something new. It doesn't diminish his love for Liverpool. Let him go for a couple of years, wish him well, get another culture, and you can welcome him back. Instead, they're tearing the guy apart because he left on a free transfer? They won't get any money off him? Sure, they didn't pay any money for him. He came through the academy, they developed him, and so what? He owes them money. He owes them, I've come through your system, I've helped you, you've helped me, and I've returned that favour by winning the lot for you, helping you win the lot. And because I didn't command the transfer fee, now you've turned against me. That's the ultimate mercenary movement by the fans, I would say. They will say, it's not just the money. For the last year, he didn't do any media and he wouldn't explain what was happening. And comparatively to Virgil van Dijk and Mo Salah, two other legends of the club, they continuously spoke with the media and said, look, it's up to the club about a new contract, whatever. And Trent didn't speak. And so they feel some sort of betrayal by a guy who just wanted to try something new. It's nothing against Liverpool. I think it's unbelievable they're booing him.
Did you see the cameraman panned to the crowd when he was coming on? Yeah. And there was this guy kind of grabbing the crest on his top and pointing at it and screaming. And I heard as well, was there damage done to his mural in Liverpool as well?
Right, yeah, there's a picture. You can see it online, and it's, again,
on a human level.
Exactly. I don't know. There'll be Liverpool fans listening to us here now talk about this and me complain about it, being like, no, you got it all wrong. It's lack of loyalty from Trent and whatever. All right, I can generously say we'll agree to disagree, but I would feel very strongly about the nerve of them booing him, personally. They're killing the idea of him coming back. Why would he want to come back to that now?
Yeah.
Because he could do 2 or 3 years in Spain. Great, And I know there's he's Champions League rivals, Real Madrid.
But it's not United.
So what?
Or Everton. Yeah, he's not going to an actual rival.
What? And now, he's going to come back. If he does come back to English football, sure, he'd be as close now to joining Everton or Man United to say F you. He'd do a Paul Ince on it. Paul Ince was shafted by Ferguson and told to go, and he went to Inter, and he comes back to the Premier League with Liverpool. And now, as a result, he's a legend of neither. So is Trent going to lose that status? Is he going to be like Michael Owen, where he's never going to belong to any one club in particular? I don't know, man. It sits with me very uncomfortably, and I would, generally speaking, I like to imagine I see people's perspectives, even if I disagree with them. I'm like, okay, that's your point of view. For this particular topic, I wouldn't go as far as to say I'm disgusted by it, because I wouldn't feel that strongly about anything to do with football, but I would disapprove of it. I'd be massively disagreeing of it. And like also at full time, Cal, he was going around to all his recently ex-Liverpool teammates and they were all embracing him, whatever. You could say easy for them, they just won the game. But it all seemed pretty sweet. And then in the background, the Liverpool fans are just applauding. There's no vitriol because the game's over. So is it pantomime? Is it like you're on the pitch? Is there a bit of affection with the booing? I don't think there is. I think there's pure vitriol in the booing.
Mm. Conor Bradley was at the right end of it though, because anytime he touched the ball, they were cheering him. Yeah. So
he's benefiting of it.
And he had a fantastic game.
He did, in fairness.
Wow, he definitely picked it up from his Premier League appearances.
And since we last spoke, Liverpool have flown it. Two games, two totally. Wins.
Well, they have an amazing fixture this weekend, which we will talk about. But look, let's look at some of the better moments of fandom, okay?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to bring you back, first of all, before I talk about some of the iconic moments from fans after games, because some of these are brilliant. I want to bring you back to 1975. I found this football fan. His name is Ronnie Lawson. Have you heard about this? He's is it Burscough Athletic? I think his team is, right?
Okay.
This guy back in the 70s was actually banned from a couple of football pitches. I wouldn't say stadiums, I'd say football
grounds.
Yeah. Local grounds. And this is BBC's Nationwide. They paid him a visit back in 1975. They wanted to meet Ronnie.
This man, Ronald Lawson, aged 46, of Burscough in Lancashire, has a record that shouts at you from the pages of referees' notebooks throughout the Northwest. Even now, right at the beginning of this football season, he's already been banned from two grounds. Referees at Barrow and at Lancaster City both decided that either Ronnie went or they did. So what is Ronnie's constant crime? Dare to stand beside him in the terraces and you'll know.
Right, challenge, so challenge!
Right, come on out!
Challenge it, so challenge it! On the Derry Scots, on the! Get on the!
Well in, Dave!
And again, so get it back now, get it back! Come on, get it back!
Ronnie Lawson's got the biggest mouth in the northwest of England.
He's too loud. Refs are like, he is not staying in this football ground. Have you ever sat beside a fella or been at a match and they're just absolutely screaming roaring?
Yeah, my own father.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. He'll be listening to this now. Probably driving around the place, screaming at someone. No, I'm only messing. He's a very lovely man. I was at a recent Munster-Leinster game, the one in Croke Park that Munster won.
Yeah.
And a colleague of ours was at the game too. And he says to me on the Monday morning, was like, your dad's some boyo. He was like, he sure is. Now, he's a very passionate Munster supporter. But yeah, he'll scream for the 80 plus minutes of a rugby match, definitely. And
is he shouting, Munster?
No chanting.
Munster.
No, just constant feedback that people not necessarily have asked for, but he will provide the feedback to the ref particularly, yeah, if it's going against his team. But he'll be relentless in his enthusiasm. He'll be shouting all the way. So I find myself, I don't know about you watching a game or a team you support, like, I go the opposite way. I just watch the game.
I think it depends. It probably depends. Funny enough, if I'm watching my club play Cashkin Cormacs in hurling, I think I'm a bit more vocal, and maybe it's because you really know the players or something. I'm not really a man now for shouting at the ref. I've tried. I suppose, you know, when you're playing as well, you're kind of like, I just know the abuse that they sometimes can get. You try.
It's the same as you.
Now, it's different if you're in Croke Park. The ref ain't going to hear you. You know what I mean? That's a different. You're just venting.
But it's cathartic.
Yeah, exactly. But at a local match, definitely, I feel like I'm a bit more loud. But maybe that's just towards the players. I guess I would be. I think I would be a bit more of a vocal fan. Now, not as loud as Ronnie Lawson there, but are you silent, so?
It's weird, yeah. Like, because I'd be chatting constantly before and after the game. I just like watching it.
Nothing worse when there's just people just chatting around you. There's nothing worse.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah, yeah, I get you. Yeah. Yeah, you have to really focus in
on
that. But the boy there that you played, like, I always think, so if someone's that passionate about it, right? And this is a different level entirely to the people I just mentioned. It was like, I don't think it's about the football. I don't think it's about the game. I mean, that's you're venting for other reasons.
You think he's just getting it out of his system?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a tough week.
I was actually watching the full thing. He's a lorry driver as well. So
look, that's constant traffic.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
So he's a lot of road rage,
I think,
built up inside.
And it's like a socially acceptable way to get your anger out.
Yeah.
Just go to games and shout.
Well, one man who was angry one time when he was questioned at a football match was the Wheelstone Raider. Do you remember him?
Yeah.
You've got no friends. Where you at, Sam?
Hey?
You at, Sam?
Well, the old Supply Mall, wouldn't
you? You at, Sam, or what?
Evers?
You at, Sam,
fantastic.
If you want, Sam, I'll give it you. You won't do it, mate.
You won't do it, mate. He's a cigarette and a pint in his hand.
Do you know what?
He wants him straight away. He's just turned.
He's ready to go. Like. Yeah. The first time I've ever heard that audio only.
Really?
You're just because I can picture every movement he's making. Because it's like the comedy is like he, like you say, like he's ready to go. Like he's like a like a good midfielder on the half turn. And he's going back to your man and going back to the game, going back to your man, going back to the game.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
beautiful. Oh, it's and they've so had him recreate it now and he's getting advertisement deals and commercial opportunities.
I think he was with a bookmakers. I think he was in one of their ads at one stage. And hey, cash in on it. Cash in on it.
Remember how exciting it was the first time you watched that? There's such a segment for going back into your mind the first time you watch viral moments.
That was
right up there. That really gathered the world together.
It did.
Tumultuous times we live in that brought everyone.
You want some? You want some? I'll give it you. One thing I don't know that they do much anymore, but it was definitely a constant in our feeds was fan TV shows going out after games and chatting to fans, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the best ones ever is Arsenal fan troops, okay? This is back in 2016. He's chatting to Arsenal fan TV just after City lost, or Arsenal lost 2-1 to City. The manager is Arsene Wenger at the time, okay? This is just proper London man, not happy.
It's last night I chatted to my mum, yeah? My mum's Wenger in. Is she mad? Is she mad? Seriously, mum, I love you, but big man thing, I don't know what you're drinking in that tea, you know.
Big man thing, I don't know what you're drinking in that tea, you know. She's winging it in.
That was the glory days of Arsenal Fan TV, which is eventually abbreviated to AFTV because it became such a commercial enterprise. Robbie Lyle, wasn't it? He's the guy who runs it. See, 2017 was a golden time for Arsenal Fan TV. That was the dying days of Arsene Wenger. He left a year later in 2018. And they all just wanted him gone, like. And then there'd be a big split among those regulars on Arsenal Fan TV about whether it was Wenger in or Wenger out, and it'd get real passionate and vitriolic and all that. And then the problem with AFTV now is, like, good results is bad for business.
Yeah. They're not getting the angry fans, like.
Look at Arsenal now, like, they're the epitome of consistency in the game.
Yeah.
Like, you can't even score. You can't even get a shot in target against Arsenal. Like, they make you work for it, never mind the goal.
Yeah.
So, like, are people watching AFTV? Look at the numbers. Look at the data behind those videos now. If Arsenal play badly or perform poorly, straight to AFTV afterwards. If it's going well, what else are you going to say? Like, you're just going to... That's first world problems, like. That's uptown issues.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, actually. I'd say the fans that run those channels are a bit kind of like sometimes deep down, maybe they just want a disaster of results just for good content.
I think so. I think there's a bit in that where, like, sometimes, do you know, if your team's playing badly, you want kind of deep down, you're not going to say it out loud, but you kind of want the form to continue. You want the results to go badly. So you're vindicated.
Yeah.
Your complaints about if it turns around and goes well, like, what else there is to say? Like, this is a big psychological study of it. It's much easier to be negative than positive.
Yeah.
Positivity takes energy.
It does. Yeah.
And consciousness.
Yeah.
Negative cynicism is very easy.
This comes out
very easy.
Yeah. Although you do see those streamers now watching the games live and reacting. Oh, I could do without those.
You know, and I have nephews and the next generation coming through that, like, their big thing, it's like the Gogglebox generation of they'll watch someone watching something. Mm.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's huge. Like, it's huge. Sky Sports used to do a thing back in the day, like 20 years ago or so, before social media became prominent or even existed, because it was like early to mid-2000s, was they'd have two fans sit and watch a game together. So it'd be like Fulham against Arsenal at Craven Cottage. One guy wearing a Fulham jersey, the other wearing an Arsenal kit, and they'd watch the game together, and that would be very entertaining. That was Gogglebox. You're watching them. It was the original Gogglebox, I suppose, watching them watching the game, and they would, like, genuinely... get mental.
Okay, yeah.
It was great. It's real old school, like Arsenal back when they were really good, like invincible time, early to mid 2000s, and they got rid of it. They didn't need to do it anymore because the thing evolved, and it was Arsenal Fan TV came in, and then is your man Andy Tate, isn't it?
Oh, hey, he's coming. You teed him up nicely because he was the best. I think he was the greatest, okay? Before I give you my favourite Andy Tate moment, this is the second bit. This is a clip of their 2-1 loss to Swansea. Andy Tate is not happy. They lost to Swansea at home. David Moyes is the manager.
I won't be surprised if they bottle it next week. If they lose Tuesday night, you can sack him. Don't care. I just want anybody but David Moyes in charge. Give it Giggsy to the end of the season.
Give it Giggsy till the end of the season. He's brilliant. But I mean, come on, who can ever forget when Manchester United lost 3-0 to City at home. Bit of a trend there, because Troops, the Arsenal fan, he was thick when Arsenal lost 2-1 to City. Well, this is Andy Tate in 2014. They've lost 3-0 to Manchester City in Old Trafford. Oh, just enjoy this.
Not too good after tonight. What else can be said? Stats are clear. Again, backwards. Miser, second goal went in. Sat behind there, sulking in his chair. The only good one tonight was Wayne Rooney. He tried and he tried. And what do you give? He's on a 6-year contract. He's best mates with Fergie. The Glazers, they don't know nothing about football, but eventually it will become a financial decision. Next Tuesday, April Fool's Day, he's the biggest fool in Manchester.
And that's you, David Moyes.
Best friends with Fergie. I'll see you next Tuesday. It's so perfect.
Technicality.
Do you know what I mean? It was like that guy, it was 80% accent. Cause him going viral. But I mean, give it Giggsy is like, it's such a cultural phenomenon that that's said in offices around the land. If someone leaves, like in a senior role, give a gig
to the end of the season.
That's how much of an impact this guy had.
Oh, it's fantastic. Oh, it's so good. If we've missed any, you can email in your suggestions on thekickoff@todayfm.com. Colin Boohig, you'll be back because we do want to look ahead to a fairly juicy fixture this weekend. City and Liverpool. And is this the race for second place? Sound, Colin?
Thank you.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Like we do every week on the show, we talk to a fan. This week, we're talking to an Irish Seagull. That's a fan of Brighton Football Club. I've got Tony Hayes on the line. How are you, Tony?
All right, thanks, Cathal. You well?
I'm good. Where do I find you today? Where are you?
I live in Wexford and down here in the sunny southeast.
Okay, you don't have a Wexford accent.
No, I don't. I was born over in London.
Okay.
Parents emigrated back in the 40s over to England. So circumstances are that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you're from London, but you're a fan of Brighton. How did that come about?
Many years ago, they formed a football club with the local parish church, St. Joseph's in Wiltstone. And we had a very, very good season in our first year of it. And the old parish priest found a few quid for us, and down we went to a weekend away in Brighton, and Brighton were playing Blackpool. It was near the end of the season. It's a game, the season where Brighton came fourth and missed out on promotion to the old First Division. And I just supported them ever since. They won 2-1 that day, but other circumstances meant they missed out.
Okay.
And that was the start of it.
And what, you just fell in love with the club from that day on?
Yes, it's a great. I was 16 at the time. It was a great city. It was a great fun. I enjoyed it. The old Goldstone Ground. There was about 25,000 people packed into it. It was just brilliant. It was a great day, and I kind of felt sorry that they missed out, because Spurs and Southampton played out a nil all draw, which meant they both got promoted. Not saying there was any skullduggery there, but it definitely was.
When did you move back over to Ireland then, Tony?
94.
All right, okay. So you're here over what, 31 years or so?
31 years, yeah.
And you've never lost the interest in Brighton. You've been going over and back to games ever since, I'd imagine, have you, yeah?
Oh, yeah, I go regular. I was a season ticket holder even for a few seasons while I was here. But we lost our ground in 97. We had to play Gillingham for 2 years, which was 60 miles away from Brighton. You know, our home games were all away, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We nearly went out of existence, you know, in 97. If we hadn't drawn at Hereford, there would be no Brighton, because like a lot of fans, Sheffield Wednesday and Bury and Macclesfield were no unscrupulous owners, sold the ground from underneath us, and we had nowhere to go. And in those days, if we'd have got relegated, you couldn't share grounds in what's now the National League. So there would have been no Brighton, or there would be an AFC Brighton, you know, a born-again club like Wimbledon and Aldershot. So, yeah, that was it. And, you know, we've never been a particularly successful club in that respect, but I just love the club. Had a bit of a spell in the late 70s and early 80s in the First Division. Got to the FA Cup final in 83. And, you know, they're just a great club, you know, and then a world away now from what they used to be. But I still see many people I've seen for 30 years going. You know, so it's incredible.
Is there many Irish fans heading over to games?
Yeah. See, what happened was we'd often see each other at airports or coming off of planes. You see the scarf and that. And myself and a guy called Danny, who's ironically a Welshman, we met a few times. And we got together and said, look, you know, there's lots of lads around who are going, and we talked to them. And that, so we put together, we did a Twitter account, and then we got people from the Twitter account to come and talk to us. And then we have our own WhatsApp account where we all keep in touch. So there's actively about 60 or so on the WhatsApp, and we all sort of help each other out, you know, with there's tickets there, there's flights coming up for here. So it's a really sort of, you know, really informs you a good way. And then we meet up at games, you know. I remember Man City away last season, there must have been about 15 of us all met up. You know, you have a drink, you have a chat, and then you go off in your own ways because they're from all parts of the country, all provinces, you know. So it's great that it's kind of a small club, as Brighton is as well in real terms. But, you know, all quite tight-knit and all helping each other out. Some fabulous, you know, fabulous supporters. You know, one guy, Joe Hudson, who lives in Galway, he hardly ever misses a match home or away. You know, that's some commitment.
They can be long days as well. Like a lot of fans that I've talked to would head over and back in the one day. Would you do that?
Oh, I do that quite often, yeah.
Do you? Yeah, it's tough on the body, I'd say.
Yeah, I was at the Newcastle game there a couple of weeks ago, and I got the bus out of Enniscorthy at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I was up, I was on the plane at, I think, about 6:20. I was across, got the train down to Brighton, got me breakfast, went to meet up with a few mates, headed to the ground. Afterwards, back up to Gatwick, flew back, and got me way home from there. So, you know, a long old day. I think it was about 2 o'clock in the morning I got home.
Gee, 24 hours.
Yeah.
Well, look, that's dedication. You must really love the club. So was the Twitter account that you set up back then, was that the Irish Seagulls Twitter account that I see on Twitter now?
Yeah, that's it. That's the one, yeah. It's got about 1,100 people, I think, following us, something around that.
Yeah.
Which is great.
It's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant. And as you said, it gives that same vibe that Brighton gives off. It's the same values almost as the club that you support.
Yeah, well, in that respect, we keep it small and intimate in that way. I mean, the vibe about Brighton is the owner, Tony Bloom, who, in my opinion, is the best chairman in Europe, if not the world, you know, is a supporter of the club. He's put his money where his mouth is, and he's took us from basically playing at Withdean Stadium, which was a running track, and any poor supporter who went there as an away fan, I feel sorry for him. I mean, I felt sorry for us as home fans. It was an absolute awful place. But we were very successful there. And now we've gone to the Amex, and the Amex has developed since we moved in there in 2011. You know, there's extra stands gone in. You know, it's shelving in the stands, and we filled out the corners, and it holds 32,500, and that's about right for us, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, and it still feels intimate as a club.
It's very well ran, and it's a template for other clubs. Like, you know, you hear a lot of pundits talking about Brighton and the great business that they do every single time there's a transfer window open, and it just shows. I mean, you are one of the best well-run clubs in the Premier League. Obviously, Irish interest over the last number of years was Evan Ferguson playing with yourselves, currently on loan with Roma, who he actually picked up an injury recently, although I did see that he is named on the squad for the upcoming international break again. That must have been pretty good when Evan came on the scene and started scoring goals for Brighton. At the very start, he was looking very promising. I remember Alan Shearer was loving him.
Yeah, he was. I mean, unfortunately, his debut for us, I saw him, his debut was in West Brom in the FA Cup. He came on that day. We won that one. But his league debut, I was at it. It was a disastrous match. We got bet 3-0 at home by Burnley, and he was brought on when we were 3-0 down. But things got better for him after that. You know, we've had some good, we've done the players still on our books, Mark Moran. Andrew Moran.
Yes.
Who's a great young player, you know, and we've had Connolly in the past, who's sort of faded away, and now he's back at Leighton Orient. And actually, the young goalkeeper at Leighton Orient, Killian Cahill, he was on Brighton's books and left us this year and went to Leighton Orient. So we keep an eye on how the other lads who've left us have got on, especially the ones who left on good terms. I mean, Dan Byrne scored a a wonder header last night for Newcastle. You know, and he was one of the lads that Chris Huedner actually bought in back in the day from Wigan for about 4 million.
Yeah.
So you know, we've had some very good Irish players come through the books who've not quite made it in the first team. But I mean, I think probably the best one who had the biggest impact was Shane Duffy. I know we bought him from Norwich, but Shane was immense for us. Absolutely loved the man.
Really?
He epitomised the talent. He was blood and guts. There was no messing with Shane, and he really kind of epitomised at the club. I think he's back at Norwich. Sorry, he's gone from Blackburn and he's gone to Norwich now. A great pro in his time. Yeah. I loved him.
Yeah, great international player as well. Andrew Moore, who you mentioned there, he's currently on loan at Los Angeles FC. He's also included in the 25-man squad for the Ireland squad for the Portugal game, which is great. Mm-hmm. So you actually have two Brighton players on the squad, which is interesting. Both not currently playing with Brighton, but they're still on the books. They're only out on loan. Come here, it's been quite a time for Brighton, hasn't it? Finished 8th last season, the second best in the club's history. At the moment, currently 10th, only 4 points off Man City, who are at second place. This must be good times to be a Brighton fan.
It is, yeah. It can be frustrating at times. You know, we look at games and we go, why do we drop points there? And then we go out and beat the Man Cities and the Chelseas and, you know, this of the world, you know, but sometimes our Achilles heel has been dropping points against, you know, teams who are not in good form as we are, to say the least, you know, and, you know, or giving away late goals. We did against Fulham this season at home, 97th minute, and against Tottenham very late on as well. You know, we'd have had those 4 points, look where we'd be sort of thing, but you can only look at what you've got, not what you could have had, you know, in all fairness.
What would be the goal? Obviously, seeing that you finished 8th last season, is the goal, Tony, as a Brighton fan then, to say, this year we want Europe?
Two seasons before that, we came 6th, don't forget.
Yeah.
You know, when De Zerbi was there and we played the Europa League, they were fantastic nights. Beating Marseille and Ajax and... Oh, geez, it was unbelievable. We all want European football, but I think the elusive thing for us as a club is to win the trophy. You know, the only major trophy we won was the Charity Shield in 1910.
Okay, right. So I can confirm you definitely weren't around for that one, were you, Tony?
No, I wasn't for that one. No. I've seen us win. You know, I saw us win the playoffs in 2004 when we went from Division Two to Division One, which is now League One, to the Championship, and you know, things like that. I've seen us win lower division things, but no, you know.
Is that your dream? Is that to see Brighton lift a cup?
You know, the FA Cup would be lovely. I've always enjoyed the FA Cup. It's my favourite competition, in all fairness.
Well, you see how much it meant to Newcastle fans when they won the Carabao, when they beat Liverpool. Actually, and who scored in that day was your former man, Dan Burns, scored the winning goal for Newcastle and is now a hero in St. James's. You play Crystal Palace this weekend. That isn't easy at all.
Yeah.
Away from home as well.
No, I know.
You're not looking forward to that.
They're in such good form, and you know, against everybody. Just ask Liverpool fans at the moment. You know, they're a difficult team to play against. They got they'd be our main rivals, our arch rivals, and I have to take my hat to them at the moment. You know, don't like to say it, but they've got a terrific manager.
Yeah.
I think he's turning them into a very decent side.
Yeah, the only thing is they're only a point ahead of you in the table, so. I mean, it'll be a huge win if you win it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody's saying, yeah, what a great start they've had to the season. Sure, if we to beat them on Sunday, you know, nobody really sort of talks about it. I think people expect us to be sort of mid-table to sort of seventh, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th, so don't really sort of talk about us unless we're near the bottom or unless we're doing something exceptional, you know, so... be nice to beat them. Great to beat them on Sunday, to be honest.
Yeah, you're quietly just going about your business there. No one's really paying too much attention. And then that's when you catch the big teams out. And when you've Danny Welbeck banging in the goals for you as well, he's currently 6th so far this season. When are you going over to a game next? Have you yet planned?
Well, I was hoping to go to Leeds on Saturday, but I couldn't. I coach with the Wexford under 13 county team.
Oh, very good.
And our interleague matches are just coming up now, before now and Christmas, with 3 of them. So I can't really get away that easily because that's sort of my priority at the moment.
How are the Wexford team doing?
Well, we've only played friendlies and a couple of little tournaments beforehand, but the Interleague starts on Sunday week when we play Carlo. Last year, when it was the under-12s, we take them. This is the team we're taking through to the Kennedy Cup.
Yes.
So the 12s become the 13s, become the 14s. We won our division and we got to the semi-final of sort of the All-Ireland contest last year and got bet 2-0 at home. But it's good. We're doing okay. We're very hopeful, you know, and that's all we can do. Try and do our best and give it our best.
Are you taking inspiration from any Premier League managers when you're looking at tactics and things like that?
No, I wouldn't be that good.
You have your own ideas. You have your own way of playing football.
Yeah, we try a few little bits and pieces. So, hopefully it'll work out for us.
Good man. Fair play. Well, look, thanks a million for chatting with me. If anyone wants to know more, maybe there's a Brighton fan listening right now and they would say, oh, I'd like to be part of the Irish Seagulls. Is there somewhere where they can contact you?
Yeah, go on to Twitter and just send me a little personal message and okay. I'll pick it up.
Thanks, Tony. And you know what? There could be a double on as well. I can just see it now. Brighton, the FA Cup winners and Wexford champions of Ireland. Thanks a million for talking to me, Tony.
Will do, Cole. All the best. Good luck.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue.
Welcome back to The Kickoff. Colin Buhig from Off The Ball is here. This weekend, there is one fixture, Colm, that is standing out in the Premier League, isn't there?
Yeah, Manchester City, Liverpool at the Etihad. Once upon a time, Colm, not too long ago, these were not just the two best teams in England, but they were probably definitely contending for the two best teams in Europe and therefore the world. Manchester City and Liverpool at the Etihad or Anfield. There would be an unbelievable fixture where it was like Pep Guardiola against Jurgen Klopp. There was a game there, was it 1-0 or 0-0? The one where people will shout at me at this now to remind me. Was it Sadio Mane had a shot and John Stones cleared off the line? It was about 2019 and it was either 1-0 or 0-0 and it was an incredibly low-scoring game. But unbelievable quality. It was like every single player on the pitch was a baller of extreme talent. And that is a rarity, surprisingly enough, because you're watching, we're exposed to top level football every night of the week these days. But it's actually rare you see like equally confident and skillful players share the pitch. We did a classic games club recently Off The Ball, the Clasico from 2010. Barcelona against Real Madrid, Barcelona won 5-0 and it was like Xavi and Iniesta and Busquets, Messi against Ronaldo and Xabi Alonso and Angel Di Maria and Mesut Ozil, Sergio Ramos, Carlos Puyol. It was like a who's who of footballers.
And they lost 5-0.
But Real Madrid were still good, even though Barca won 5-0. And if you fast forward then to recent years in City and Liverpool, it was like without the goals being scored, it was so entertaining as a low-scoring fair. There was another time where at Anfield, Riyad Mahrez missed the penalty at the start of the season for City against Liverpool. And it's like, not many goals, it's not even great goals stick out in that game. It's just brilliant football. But now you're talking 2025 version of these two sides. And like you teed it up earlier in the show, is this a fight for second place? Like, is this Mikel Arteta and Arsenal waving from the top of the mountain and the two boys digging it out here? Because if you look at the recent record for City against Liverpool, not that great. So Liverpool won here at the Etihad in February of this year, i.e. last season 2-0. And then they beat them at Anfield 2-0, same scoreline, just a couple of months before that. Previous two games were draws, so you have to go back to April Fool's Day 2023 for the last time that City beat Liverpool. That was 4-1.
Okay.
That's what we're hoping for. So what version are you seeing them right now? Liverpool much better, beat Aston Villa last Saturday night. Now, Villa, in the first 20 minutes, created three really good goal-scoring opportunities, but eventually, because Emi Martinez gave the ball to Mo Salah, Salah took full advantage. Liverpool ran out fairly comfortable victors. Beat Real Madrid pretty well during the week, despite it only being 1-0. They had a load of chances. But then if you look at Man City, they're in fine form at the moment, like kind of quietly going about their business. Like, no one's really paying attention to City. They beat Bournemouth, the very good Bournemouth side, last weekend, 3-1 at the Etihad, and they beat Borussia Dortmund 4-1 at the Etihad in the Champions League.
They're
tasty
impressive.
Enough, like, and yeah. You know, it's your man up front who's doing a lot of the damage, but Phil Foden's performance during the week against Dortmund was very good. He can be excellent against Liverpool too. He has form for specifically playing against Liverpool. It's going to be a tasty affair. It's actually a very hard game to call, this one, I think.
Without Haaland, would Man City be in a bit of trouble though?
Like, unbelievably.
13 goals in the
league.
I think
own goals is like their third top scorer this season, even by his standards, because when he goes quiet, you start questioning him. I mean, it was the famous thing with Roy Keane saying he's a League Two footballer in terms of how he plays outside of the goals.
And he's since edited that to like, okay, maybe he's championship worthy. Yeah, maybe, yeah. You know?
But it's interesting. It's a hard position for Haaland. Like, it's a funny one. You'd wonder, would you rather be a Haaland or would you rather be a Phil Foden? Like, 11 minutes into the Dortmund game was the first time that Haaland got a touch of the ball. You know? And he only needs, like, his second touch. Could be a goal, exactly, you know. That's the way it works. But it's a funny way of trying to judge him on anything bar his goals. Why do you need to? Because it's not like he's very busy in the game. If he's not scoring, he doesn't need to when he's scoring that amount.
Exactly. And he's a freak of nature's generational talent of goal scoring. Let him off, like, because how many number nine goal scorers are there around? There's himself and Harry Kane and Kylian Mbappe, but it's not a huge amount of fellas who do that these days. So, like, I think the world's accepted, leave him off, especially when he's in this form. I had to look that up because that game was annoying me, that one at the start of 2019. It was the 3rd of January. City actually won that game 2-1. So I think that's the game where John Stones clears off the line. And it's one of the greatest games in Premier League history. But it's just 2-1. It's only in early January. It didn't decide anything right then and there. But I believe that's the season where Liverpool finished on something outrageous, like 97 points, and came second to Man City. So they were like... The standard that they were at that time, it's diminished a little bit in terms of a fixture since then, but it's still probably like pound for pound the most captivating game in the Premier League, because you have on their day Man City against on their day Liverpool are probably the two best teams in the league in terms of watching games. Like, Arsenal are just super efficient, not necessarily that exciting, which is no problem, by the way. Go about your business and win the league and prove everyone wrong. And then the rest of the league is like Spurs, Chelsea, Man United, Newcastle, Aston Villa. They're all kind of basket cases in their own right. Sometimes they're great. Sometimes they don't look like they belong in the league. Man City and Liverpool on their day, still two of the best.
And Liverpool have turned a corner now, haven't they? Or have they?
I think so. Like, I think the last two games has been huge, because this time last week we talked about them with a slight concern that I was thinking, like, if Liverpool get beaten well in these three games, the Villa game, the Madrid match, and now Man City, I was like, geez, would they actually consider Arne Slot's position, because we're heading into an international break then? That's clearly completely out the window now, and maybe it was never going to happen anyway. But I've been saying all year so far that if Liverpool get it right with their squad, I think they're still title contenders. Never mind, like, will they finish in the top four? Never mind about European football or, like, will Salah get playing well? If they actually get their midfield and forward sorted out in their defence, which I know is every part of the pitch, but they're actually, I think they're tantalisingly close to getting it sorted. And if they do, I think they're so dangerous.
Yeah. Any other games this weekend taking your fancy?
I'd say the opposite end, the lunchtime kickoff on Saturday, Spurs against Manchester United. So, of course, what's the last one? What happened the last time these two sides met? Europa League final.
Oh,
Spurs 1, Man United 0.
It raced out of my memory. Terrible game.
Sansang. You were talking about low scoring great games there. I mentioned this is the total opposite. It was low scoring, but it was equally terrible.
Yeah.
And then last season was the same scoreline actually at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Again, back in February, Spurs beat United 1-0. It was James Maddison who scored the goal. I think that's the game. It's around the time where Roy Keane was having a cut off him.
Oh, is this the dart celebration?
Around that time. It was around. Might have been specifically then. But Maddison, like, we haven't seen an awful lot of Maddison since then. He's just...
He's injured, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's cracked kind of permanently. Which is, I love James Maddison as a footballer. Same kind of conversation we had about Jack Wilshere. I think he's like that kind of a footballer. Very entertaining. So it's been a wild... last few games in terms of it's so unpredictable. It's like you have a terrible 1-0 in the Europa League final, and then last season they met in the League Cup and Spurs won 4-3 at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and Altay Bayındır was in the Man United goal and he was making clangor after clangor, and then afterwards Ruben Amorim was defending him. It was around Christmas time last year. So they're kind of two kind of sick teams, but they're mending a little bit because they have a bit of sensibility about them now with Thomas Frank, even though last week came in for a lot of criticism, the performance against Chelsea. It was only 1-0. This is the team of the show's low-scoring games that are quite misleading. It was only 1-0, but Chelsea were much, much better than them. I think Spurs' XG was appallingly low last weekend. And then after the game, Mickey van de Ven is one of a couple of players who seems to snub Thomas Frank, the Spurs manager, and the fans. But then during the week against Copenhagen in the Champions League, van de Ven runs the pitch and finishes one of the best goals you'll see all season. A bit like when Son Heung-min, the Spurs legend, scored a similar goal against Burnley back in the day in the same stadium. So kind of Spurs are way more consistent under Thomas Frank. The Spurs fans want the opposite now. They want a bit of Ange Postecoglou excitement to match with the stability of Thomas Frank. Basically, what do you want, Spurs fans?
Yeah.
You want it all.
Exactly.
You want it all,
what
man.
Do you want?
You want it all. And then United are, you know, not that they're completely out of the woods of being a joke, but they're taking a little bit more seriously in the last four games. They won 3 and drawn 1,
But you can have like an explanation for all of them. Like the first game in that one was against Sunderland, who like are still a top four club at the time of speaking. They play Arsenal this weekend. That's going to be another good game.
Yeah.
And then United Bay, you know, Brighton, and then Liverpool, who were going through their mini crisis at the time. And then they had a draw last week in United against Nottingham Forest City Ground. So there, I don't think they're overly convincing, but they're much improved. So I think both Spurs and Man United have come a bit of the way since these two last shared a pitch in early summer.
So you're hoping for a more entertaining game?
More entertaining game. It was. What's Logan Roy's line to his children in Succession? You are not serious people.
Oh, I thought it was F off.
It's also that, yeah. So whatever way you're having it there.
You're not serious people, yeah. Okay, predictions. By the way, just I won't go through what you had predicted wrong the last one, but you've had 0 out of 4 since I've been taking count.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that, really.
Yeah, you got
affect my confidence.
All 3 wrong last weekend.
Affect my confidence.
Just so you're aware, you got all 3 wrong last weekend.
That's no problem, yeah. It's like we're on a loop there. Yeah.
I just want to make sure you know all 3 are wrong. So go on, City and Liverpool. What are you thinking here? It's hard to call. I know.
I'll go 0-0, but captivating.
Okay. And Tottenham United
3-2 United.
3-2 United.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Colm, thank you very much.
No problem.
Enjoy the football this weekend. We'll see you next week.
Up, Kevins. Quarterfinal this weekend.
Please God, we can do the business.
The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Thank you very much for listening to another episode of The Kickoff. Just to let you know, some of the games that are live on Sky Sports this weekend. It's a busy weekend of Premier League football. 5:30 on Saturday, Sunderland versus Arsenal. That's 5:30. Coverage starts on Sky Sports, main event from 5 p.m. And then my favourite fixture is the 8 p.m. on a Saturday night, Chelsea versus Wolves. And on Sunday, it's quite a super Sunday. There's loads of games on Sky Sports. Some of the main ones, Brentford, our beloved Brentford, take on Newcastle United at home. Kickoff is at 2 p.m. And then that afternoon, Manchester City versus Liverpool, 4:30 kickoff, live from the Etihad on Sky Sports. Quite the weekend. Enjoy the football. If you do like what you've been listening to, please like, subscribe, rate this podcast. Just helps it, boosts it up a bit. You know, I've pleaded that case now for the last couple of weeks. This is my last time asking, I promise. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the football. Good luck.
Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.